fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who.
Well, what a fun thing.
Welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday. It's Friday, April 24th, but it's actually Thursday, April 23rd, because we're together at my house.
High five if you're watching on YouTube. We just high five.
It's so rare.
It was a good high five.
That we get to be together in person to record.
Yes.
Normally we do it remotely.
We do it separately.
We hope you're with whoever you want to be with this Freaky Friday.
Yeah. We have the live stream after this, so we thought, let's just record together. And I was thinking on the way over here, in the early days, how
this is how we did it.
All of our episodes were together, and I was trying to. I guess COVID is
COVID
what
split us
stopped.
Up?
COVID split a lot of people,
you motherfuckers. Because we were like, well, I guess we can kind of figure it out, and that's when we started doing Skype. And Tommy helped us like clap. It was before there was like apps that would help you do it. So yeah, it was. We did a lot of. I mean, I think pretty much everything up through early 2020 was at my old house when there was a mattress on the wall for. Sound.
And just blankets over various pieces of furniture.
Now we have a legit studio and a legit camera and a legit people listen. Not that if you listened to 2020, you were not legit.
No, you're an OG if you listened to 2020. Thank you.
Way back when. So yeah, well, we've got, thank you to everybody that sent these stories in too.
Yeah. We got a whole lineup. So I say we just dive in.
It's rock and roll.
I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Fish and it's called Oh Brother. Content warning, there's a mention of rape. Fish writes, I just started listening to you this year in 2026. I love the show and it helps me get through my long days door dashing. My sister-in-law's wife listens or recommended you, so if you choose to share this story, she'll probably hear it before me. Hi, Sabrina. Anyways, on to the story. So I will tell you what I remember hearing about that night, and then I will tell you what was found out in court. Because these things are not the same, and I only recently discovered there was a difference. Mind you, I was in high school, like a junior or senior, and my brain has blocked out a lot of things for me. When this whole thing went down, I was out of town with my mother. We were visiting a cousin in another state and had no idea about anything until well after. So it was fall break. Me and my mom were out of town. My brother was left at home because he was like 19 and had graduated from high school. He was not home alone, though. We had a friend, his name is Justice, living with us at our house because my mother loved to take in strays and was always willing to help anyone that needed it. While we were gone, my brother came up with a really stupid plan. See, my brother's girlfriend of like 4 months, Danielle, had lied to my brother and told her when she and this guy JJ broke up, JJ didn't take it well and had raped her. My brother, being the idiot that he is, thought he would take matters into his own hands and, quote, handle the problem. Now, I had met this guy, JJ, once. He was a cute, seen, emo kid, and I was a little goth girl, and apparently the guy had a crush on me. We met, there was no flame, nothing happened, we hung out, and then went our separate ways, with me never giving the guy any kind of consideration again. We didn't hang out in the same crowd. My fucking brother decided to use that information and have someone call JJ and pretend to be me and invite him to this party. And he agreed. So my brother and Justice go to this party and then somehow convince JJ to go somewhere else with them. To another party, maybe? I'm pretty sure they, again, told him that I was at this other party and he could meet up with me there. Anyway, they're on the way to this party. JJ driving, Justice in the passenger seat, and my brother in the back. I don't know the details here. I'll fill them in later. Right now, we're just talking about what I was told at the time. Somehow, they ended up getting JJ out of the car and beating the shit out of him on this old country road that people don't really use. They drug him into this random field and left him out there, basically hogtied with duct tape. My brother told me that he just beat him and left him there tied up, assuming that he would get himself free eventually and would have learned his lesson. Justice and my brother then took JJ's car to a gas station and called a friend of theirs for a ride. They went home and pretended like nothing happened, even after this dude never made it home. After I came home from being on vacation, I remember one evening sitting with Justice in our garage smoking, because teenagers, dude, and Justice just started crying. Now, I was shooketh. Justice was not an emotional kind of guy. So I went to console him, and he told me that he had beat someone and stepped on his neck. I vividly remember him telling me that, quote, he heard his neck crunch. Me, not knowing what to say, said something along the lines of, I'm sure it wasn't that serious. It'll be okay. You didn't mean to, right? And for some trauma-induced reason, my brain blacked this moment out for over a year. Like, as soon as I walked out of the garage, it was like it never happened. Okay, on to the next thing. Cops start showing up and questioning my brother, questioning me. I'm like, I was out of town that week, and I was never questioned again. And then eventually, my brother and Justice were arrested. Now, my brother was all, I'm a badass, and I don't snitch, and I'm not saying anything, so I won't get in trouble. Justice, on the other hand, folded like a wet napkin. They told him that my brother was in the other room ratting him out, and that dude spilled his guts and put everything on my brother. He said he was basically just along for the ride and an unwilling participant. So I just had to sit there and watch as my brother decided not to say a word about anything, and Justice turned on him. And even our cousins, who were somehow involved, turned on my brother. If I remember right, my girl cousin, who isn't named anywhere so I won't say her name, is apparently the person who called JJ pretending to be me to lure him to the party. And my guy cousin, also not named, was I think the person that picked them up from the gas station or whatever and drove them home. They were never charged with anything because, and I'm guessing here as I don't talk to them anymore, they received immunity for talking. Now on to the trial, which was like a fever dream that I honestly don't remember any of it. It was halfway through this trial when my brain spontaneously remembered the thing Justice said to me, but the lawyer was like, I can't put you on the stand to say that because you're his sister and everyone will think you're lying to save him. Then the fever dream was over, and my brother was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 25 years. It was definitely a deserved sentence. Now, here is what actually happened. My brother and Justice threw a party at my mom's house while she was gone, really not that unusual for him, and invited JJ over to the party. While they were all drinking, he might have tried to drug him with painkillers. I read this in a paper about the whole thing, but it didn't work. My brother then said he was going to meet me at a gas station and JJ could drive him and Justice there. While JJ was driving, Justice said he had to throw up and made JJ pull over. When he pulled over, my brother used duct tape and tried to strangle JJ from the back seat. He then pulled him out of the car and they beat him until he was bloody and barely breathing, if breathing at all. They then drug him into a field, tied his hands behind his back with duct tape, and left him there. Took his car to a welcome center down the road and caught a ride back to the house. It was 3.5 months until JJ's body was found. This whole thing is an absolute travesty that happened because this one little girl decided to lie and say JJ raped her. She admitted she lied when they put her on the stand. I believe that my brother got what he deserved, if not getting off light for it. He is a bit of a sociopath who used to chase me around with knives and lighters, so honestly, something was bound to get him caught up eventually. But I think that Justice should have been sentenced for his part in the whole thing. But because my brother refused to talk, all they had to go on was what Justice said about it all, and he got away with helping murder this guy. Well, there you go. This is the sordid tale of my brother, the murderer. Between this and almost dying in an EF5 tornado a couple years ago, I always win at two truths and a lie. Fun side note, my brother is only 1 year older than me, and we ran in a lot of the same circles and were really close for most of our lives before this. I've known my husband since middle school, and because of the same circles and all, my brother knew him also eventually. They were actually besties that called each other hubby. My brother had actually called my now husband to go with him that night, but he was busy taking care of his infant son at the time and decided to stay home. My brother told him he was going to beat up this guy and needed help, but my man was too busy trying to be a good teenage dad. Crazy. Anyways, thanks for taking the time to read this insane shit. You guys are the literal best and keep it creepy.
Wow. I mean, just
so sad.
It's a tragedy on so many different levels. On getting all those kids involved, that, and because they were teenagers, right? But your brother taking it that far.
Yeah, yeah. And I always want to believe anyone that says they've been sexually assaulted. If she got on the stand and then said she lied about it, then I'm going to believe she lied about it. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, she hadn't said that, would this have happened? Maybe not. I also think if someone has this much anger in them, something like you said, he used to chase you around with knives and stuff. Something was bound to catch up with him. So while this girl may have told a lie, he's in full charge of his own actions. He didn't have to do that.
No, total responsibility. And I agree with, you know, like saying that with Fish, saying the people that helped on the front end and the back end, that's accessory, you know, before and after. And it also sounds like your brother was, I mean, it was premeditated. They tried to poison him. Then they took him in the car, tried to strangle him. And then, you know, second degree usually is like, well, we didn't intend to kill him. We just wanted to beat him up and show him a lesson. At some point, though, I mean, it sounds like the jury believed that the beating at least was just to kind of, we figured he would get back up, but it sounds like justice knew he wasn't going to get back up. And you just think of that poor guy out in the field thinking, you know, got lured there under false pretenses, thinking they're giving somebody a ride. I just got to pull over. Mm-hmm. And you pull over and that's the last thing, you know, you do ultimately. But
3.5 months that
family,
that same teenager's family. Mm-hmm. Doesn't know where he is.
Devastating.
Doesn't know what happened. Yeah. And 3.5 months of the brother and justice sitting on this information, which, as you found out in the garage, Fish, takes a toll. Eventually, if you've got a conscience, you're going to crack.
No, for sure. And it sounds like if the brother would have maybe made a deal or said something also, but I don't know that a lesser sentence would have been merited given the details that we do know.
Yeah.
God damn.
I agree that that is odd. It was second degree because it does seem if they tried to poison him at the party and he called your now husband, which is crazy.
Yeah. That's such a,
like, everything builds upon each other in our lives. If he hadn't been a teenage dad, which at the time, You're probably like, God, dude, I want to be at a party with my friends. I've got a kid. Well, that kid ended up saving you a lot of problems.
For real. It's my old law school dean used to say, good news, bad news. Who's to say? It's like, oh, I had to miss that party that night. Well, probably a good thing you missed that party. Yeah. But damn, Fish, well, I hope you're taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, man, that whole community was rocked by this. Like, everybody kind of had a part in it, whether you were at the party when it happened. I think tragedies like that take a toll.
And it sounds like a lot of people in your family were involved and probably under the pretense of, he's just going to beat him up, which is still something we shouldn't do. But as teens, you know. Mm-hmm. And I hope they're all getting help, because to know you contributed to something like that is very traumatic.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, tell your kids, like, violence is not the answer. Everybody that you can hear, like, don't do this. It can ruin your life. But, well, thank you, Fish, for taking the time to send that to us.
Yes, thank you.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Ooh, I tell you what, I love to sleep, and I love to get a little thing on my sleep tracker that gives me a green light that's like, you slept so well, you did such a great job, and I'm like, it's not me, it's my great bed, but really, also, it's my great Boll & Branch sheets. Ooh. They take me in.
I told you, the other week, I said,
nothing.
We're getting rid of every sheet in this house. Yes. It is not a Boll & Branch sheet, and that we did. And
throw
so,
them out.
Last night, when it was time to change the sheets, I was like, I know I'm going to be getting a Boll & Branch sheet because I've set it up to be that way.
You don't have to pull down one from the thing and be like, nah, God damn it.
No, this isn't what I want.
Every
and
time.
Go through a bunch. I'm like, just get donate them. Keep the ones you want and donate the rest. And
people
now
can use them.
I am Bowling Branch only. We're a Bowling Branch only household.
I'm getting bowled and branched every night in my bed, and I love it. Upgrade your sleep with Bowling Branch. Get 15% off your first order plus free shipping at bowlingbranch.com/creepy with code creepy.
That's Bowl and Branch, bowlandbranch.com/creepy, code creepy, to unlock 15% off. Exclusions apply. This next one is from Michelle and is called, I Had a Premonition of My Husband's Funeral. Hi, I'm a new listener. I love your show. I was listening to episode 210 and had a similar experience as the daughter who saw her mom in her dreams after her mother had passed. August 3rd, 2014, I lost my husband. When we met in college, I knew instantly we would be together and have a family. We had two kids and had a strong, happy marriage. He was a music teacher. He taught grades 4 through 12. He was the marching band director. I would volunteer to help out with the marching band. We used to joke that Friday night football games was our date night. I got to know the students and their families pretty well. The summer of 2014, I started having dreams of his funeral. They were so vivid. I told my husband about them and asked him to see our family doctor for a checkup to make sure he was okay. At the time, he was a diabetic. He was having some edema in his left leg. He would brush it off and tell me he was fine and that he would get a checkup when he had time. I had band parents calling me and telling me how they were worried about him because he was having difficulty during band practice. I begged and pleaded with him to see a doctor. I had such a bad feeling in my gut. He finally relented and saw our family doctor. They did an EKG in the office. It wasn't great, nor was it sounding off alarm bells. They wanted him to get a stress test. He said he would do that after band camp. Well, that was on his birthday, July 30th. 4 days later, he had a massive heart attack at home. I had come back from an errand for him and found him. The whole time I was on this errand, I felt sick to my stomach. I'd missed a call from him, and when I tried calling him back, he didn't answer. When I found him, I immediately called 911 and started CPR. I told my kids to go to the neighbor's house. I didn't want them to see what was happening. It was all exactly as I had dreamed. We were all devastated by his loss. Our kids at the time were only 12 and 10. For the first week, I would feel someone sitting on the edge of the bed as I cried. I was so angry at him. As time went on, I started dreaming of him. We would meet up for coffee at a cafe and talk about the kids and how he wanted me to move on with my life. I have been able to move on. I did find a new love. My kids have had a difficult time processing this. As a result, my youngest child is estranged from the family. I know his dad's death is part of the reason, as well as other factors that I don't wish to discuss. I haven't had many dreams of him lately. Usually if I do, he doesn't say anything, just waves and disappears. Maybe he feels I'm okay. I miss him every day. Anyway, that's my story. I uploaded the last family picture we took.
Oh my gosh, that is heartbreaking. That feeling of dread, and then like it truly like you a know, premonition come true.
It's, I feel like, especially partners and spouses, you just have like the sixth sense, mm-hmm. and you already were like, have you knew for a while, like your gut was telling you. I've gotten calls and I'm just like, this is going to be bad. Mm-mm. I just know from the time of day who it is, you know, like this isn't going to be a good call. And that feeling is so awful. I'm so mm-hmm. sorry you were the one that found him. Yeah. And I hope you're, like we always say, taking care of yourself, getting therapy. All of you and your kids went through a very traumatic thing. Mm-hmm. And this picture shows a lot of love, and yeah. I'm glad you had one last happy picture before that happened.
Yeah, one good memory with mm-hmm. everybody together. But that feeling of getting home, and I had an extended aunt whose husband passed away like that. He was, you know, in the backyard, and she had gone to the store and came home and found him in the backyard. And it is just such a helpless feeling, and that feeling of like, I should have done more. What could mm-hmm. I have done? And there, you did everything you could have done. That's just the time that it happens. You know, like you said, the doctors did an EKG. Yeah. They told you like, it's not too bad. Like, come back. So everybody was, you know, he went to the doctor. And so there, it's just that feeling of almost like a lightning strike feeling where you're like, why this day? Why this time? Why now? And it's like, we can't know. But the fact that you get to meet up with him at a cafe and talk about the kids. And I'm sorry that it's caused, you know, a schism with your youngest, but maybe, who knows, maybe your husband will go and visit your youngest in their dream. Maybe they can meet up at the cafe and just, you know, kind of say, mom's moved on. It's okay. Cause sometimes we need that extra little
Yeah, I think it can be really hard for kids to accept a new relationship when one of their parents has passed. They feel like they're betraying the parent that died, you know, or like they're, if I love this person, I'm replacing them as my dad. And that doesn't have to be the case. You can have, you can love both of them.
Truly. I mean, there's all the conversation about Aubrey Plaza they recently had of, she was separated from her husband for 4 to 6 months. He passed away. And then, you know, within the next year, she had found someone else. She had moved on. Everybody said, you know, they were separated because there were comments online going, she rushed into it or she shouldn't have done that. First of all, I think she was friends with this person for many years that she ended up with. So, you know, you kind of, that's a different thing than just meeting a stranger. But the same with Patton Oswalt just posted a memory of his ex, or not ex, but his now deceased wife, Michelle McNamara, the amazing true crime writer, and he had put a real old picture of them up together, and it was so cute, and it just said, like, 10 years, miss you, baby. Aww. And the motherfuckers in the comments that were like, this is so disrespectful to your wife, Meredith Salinger, tagging her, and people are like, are you, what is wrong with you?
You think she didn't see that?
A, and B, you think she doesn't have a healthy, normal relationship with this woman who is deceased because she cares for and mothers this woman's child. Yeah. She respects her so much, and the way they lovingly talk about it, it was just completely out of pocket for people to be tagging her in the comments going, aren't you mad that your husband is there's no. And then a ton of people were like, no, my husband died and my new husband's like, what am I going to be jealous of a dead guy? Like, of course you love him. And like,
and that was a big part of your life. So to like deny that of your new partner is like, okay, well, I guess I can't talk about this huge chunk of my life. Also, it's the mother to my child. So, you know, and I remember when she died, and then it was like 4 to 6 months later, he got married again.
I think, yeah, or like 18 months. It was something like that. What, something wasn't like very short. Yeah, but people,
bitched then. And then it's like, so you're not happy because
he moved on.
After 10 years, he makes this post, but you also are critical that he moved on too fast from her in the first place and got married to someone who I also think they were friends already.
Yeah, kind of like new, you know, tangentially.
And also, who the fuck are you to tell anybody when they can and can't like get with someone? Everyone grieves differently. Maybe we don't know what anybody's relationship is. And, you know, maybe they are moving on too fast and they learn that and they're like, this was a rebound because I was grieving and sad. And then they break up and, you know, or maybe it's like,
it's a 10-year rebound for Patton.
This was good for me, you know, and others might not follow the same path, but that's okay.
I'm like, this person is grieving. You can't tell them how to live their lives, like where to find comfort and joy. So good for you, Michelle. I'm happy for you. And to everybody else that's lost a spouse or loved one or partner like that, and you found love again, like, don't let anybody hate on you for that. Go find your love.
No,
it's not their business.
It's a really hard thing to do for the person that is grieving. And then it's finally like, okay, I think I'm ready to get back out there. And then to be ridiculed about that.
Nah.
Their life is already hard enough, so why don't you just try supporting them?
It's like, why don't you go and punch them in the gut? You about to do the same thing for them. So, well, thank you, Michelle, for sharing that and sharing your husband with us.
Absolutely.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back. You know that hoodie you can't stop reaching for? The one that feels like a second skin? It's soft, it's warm, and it makes you feel grounded and like a new person, and you don't want to wear anything else on you? I found it, and trust me, it's not what you expect. It's called Pekka. It's spelled P-A-K-A. And if you're tired of hoodies that stretch out, they peel, they feel heavy, this is what you want. It's the upgrade you've been waiting for.
I love a Pekka, which is an alpaca. I love them. I've met them. I've hung out with them.
They're incredible.
I've partied with them. And now I get to enjoy their wonderful hair made into the most comfortable hoodie I've ever had in my life.
It's wonderful. I love that I have the woman's hoodie in sky blue. It is so soft. Every time I'm on a road trip, if I'm cozy on the couch, it's perfect for all occasions. And I feel like it's lightweight enough that even as it gets warmer, I'm still going to be able to wear it.
I have the the hoodie, mm-hmm. which is like
original.
The original
well.
Hoodie in navy. Then I have the original Woman's Crew in rosewood, which is the prettiest shade of pink. Mm-hmm. I wore it the other day. It was, and it, we live in Texas. And I was like, this is so nice. I'm not, it's like the perfect weight for this time of year. I also got myself a pair of those essential mid-rise brief drawers.
Okay.
Maybe the most comfortable pair of underwear I've ever worn.
So I got the Women's Essential Scoop Bralette in forage, and I was like, this isn't supposed to be this soft. It can't be this comfortable and soft.
This isn't right, but Paca, it is.
Paca is magical and so good. Each one is handcrafted in Peru with the artisan's name stitched in the tag. Mine says Rosemary.
I love that,
on
too.
My blue one, and my green one is from Olga. Shout out. It's the mark of quality and care. I appreciate them both. Over 100,000 people have already picked up the Paca hoodie. What are you waiting for? It feels amazing. It's made sustainably and ethically from traceable alpaca fiber while supporting the communities that create it.
To grab your Paca hoodie, go to www.pacaapparel.com. That's www.pacaapparel.com. Well, this next one is from Brianna, and it's called That One Patient. I wasn't sure whether to call this a paranormal experience. It's not exactly a ghost story, but it still gives me goosebumps. I also wasn't sure whether to share it, but I believe if anyone will be respectful to the deceased, it's you two. However, I have changed some minor details to protect the identity of my patient. I'm a paramedic and have been in the job for 5 years. This story takes place back when I was a baby paramedic. We were called to a job involving a possible deceased patient with unknown downtime. As a third-year student, I was asked to lead this case. So in I go, carrying 20 kilos of gear and with two senior paramedics following me. I'm just getting my hands on the patient, who was sitting up in his armchair, when my mentor calls from the doorway, "Stop! Obvious death!" This is where I tell you that despite what the movies will show, we don't always bust in, defibrillators blazing and sticking needles into people's hearts. Sometimes the kindest, most respectful thing we can do for our patient and their family is to let them go. Resuscitation is an ugly, chaotic, traumatic thing to witness or go through, and it is rightfully a crime to inflict unnecessary medical procedures on a corpse. As such, we have certain guidelines for when we shouldn't start CPR. At the time and location of this event, those guidelines were as follows. 1. The patient has a legal do not resuscitate order in place that the paramedics have witnessed with their own eyes. 2. The patient has sustained, quote, injuries incompatible with life. I won't go into detail here, but use your imagination. Or 3. The patient is exhibiting signs of, quote, obvious death. In 2019, the time of this story, those obvious death signs were rigor mortis, stiffening of the body tissues that occur within the hours after death, liver mortis, pooling of bodily fluids due to gravity, causing discoloration at the lowest points of the body, and decomposition. I stopped the process of assessing the patient, and we simply pivoted to taking care of the family. A cup of tea and a kind word can be surprisingly effective. And then, the waiting. We couldn't leave until the police arrived, as his doctor wasn't prepared to sign the death certificate. So, there we sat. Three paramedics, well, two and a half, and our patient, who sat in his armchair and looked exactly like what he was. A kind, older man who had sat down for a nap in his favorite armchair and simply never woke up. As we waited, I was dwelling. How did my mentor know this was an obvious death case? She was right, of course. The patient had liver mortis in all the right places and was in complete rigor. But from where my mentor had stood in the doorway, none of those things were visible. The lividity was covered by his slippers and clothes, and he was tucked up under a big blanket. Suddenly, it hit me. Are you ever in a room and without consciously assessing it, you're aware of the number of people in the room with you? Even in silence, you know who is there with you. I realized that there were only three people in that room. Four bodies, but only three people. The sense that counted people was getting nothing from the armchair. I got goosebumps and suddenly felt very emotional. This wasn't my first deceased patient. Not my first obvious death, but it was my first patient that I'd sat with for such a long time, and definitely the first time I'd noticed this. Was this absence what my mentor had used to make her call? Did she sense his soul had left us already? In the years of my practice since, I've come to think that perhaps she could just tell from the very little skin she could see on his face. Or maybe there was a smell that I hadn't noticed, although truthfully, it's a hard smell to miss. Maybe I've forgotten something about the scene that would make it all click, something that I wouldn't miss now with more experienced eyes, but that as a baby paramedic went over my head? I'm still not sure, but I know that day is when I really started believing in the human soul, and that the soul is what calls us to other people, that our bodies really are just vessels, and that when we leave, those vessels are not us anymore. We should, of course, still respect those vessels before and after the heart stops beating, but that the person you are is so much more than the muscles and bones. I'm so thankful to my patient for the lessons he taught me that day. I carry my patients with me all the time, and as I move forward with my career, I recently started medical school, and now I'm a baby doctor. I hope to take all these bits with me into my future practice, too.
Oh, Brianna. What a kind thing to do for that person. You sit and you monitor their vessel after they're gone. Yeah,
I did not know that. I've never heard the obvious death
thing. I had no idea.
And apologies if you don't just yell, stop, obvious death, like I did. It might have been more like, stop, it's an obvious death.
We got an obvious death here. I don't know. Who knows? You might see it every day. I had the same feeling when my dad died because he died in the, you know, in the ICU, and we had to like make the decision to like turn off the machines. And there was like this moment when we were turning them off, and then we all went and they're like, we're going to, you know, move the tubes and stuff and you can come back in. And really only my aunt and I went back in. And when I went back in, I was like, oh, it's just a dead body. Like, I really just, it really felt empty. Exactly what Brianna was describing. In the moment, of course, I didn't feel that. And of course, we were very wrapped up in emotions. But it was like, once I did see it, but not
looking back, you can see that that's how you felt.
Well, and I wonder, I realized that's why I kind of had a feeling when we went in that my aunt was not in the room when we had made, you know, pulled the plug to put it in the short terms. But so she came in afterwards. So she was kind of crying and boo-hoo on him. And I was just kind of like, oh, well, my dad's not here. He's actually, I was kind of like, is he behind me? He felt like a, I don't know, like Jiminy Cricket or like a Tinkerbell. But it's just like, it's not there. Whatever that is just a meat sack. But like you said, you need to be nice to the meat sack.
Of course.
Like throw it out.
I mean, the meat sack is, you know, what has been carrying around the person you love all these years.
True.
The eyes you've been looking into. The heart you hear when you hug them. The heart beating. So why it may still be a vessel. Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, we all have to take care of our vessels while we're living in them. And it's respectful for after the us has left them for them to still be respectfully handled in, you know, people in the death care industry that do that. It's a very courageous and admirable thing. And especially like paramedics. And now you're a doctor.
Yeah.
You sound like you have the perfect personality to be one. And also, baby paramedic and baby doctor
watch
sounds like
shows.
A show that we
would watch both.
That would air after like NCIS or something.
No, yeah, I think you are absolutely the type of person that needs to do those jobs. Because you said, like, you know, when you come into a room and you can tell, like, there's only three people and four bodies. My Uncle Jerry passed away at home. A friend of a character of the show. I'm sure if you've listened since 2019, 2020, we talked to him. Well, he passed away a couple years ago and he was on hospice at home. My mom, same aunt that was in the room with me, with my dad, we're sitting there talking. And at some point he died. And then for 20 minutes, my aunt and mother were talking. And then my cousin's like, his daughter is a nurse. And so she's very stoic, but was like making calls and stuff. My mom's like, what's going on? And my cousin's like, he died. And my mom's like, when? When? And my cousin said, when the two of you were talking.
Yeah.
And I said, probably that he felt so comforted and calm that his little sister and his little sister's best friend from when they were like kindergarten. I mean, he was, those are voices that you hear at Thanksgiving, at Christmas, that it's just beep, 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 in the other room. And you just go, I'm just going to slip off for a nap here. And then you leave the vessel and you're like, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop. And then you get to watch them take the news.
News.
He said, I was always
quiet. Someone like to check the pulse.
Honestly.
I was in
He
the
would
room.
Fall asleep whenever, at every Christmas and Thanksgiving, he'd fall asleep. So it just looked normal.
I was in the room, also hospice, at a hospital with my sister-in-law and her cousin when Tommy and my sister-in-law's grandfather passed. Mm. And I mean, it is hospice. So everyone is just like sitting around visiting. You're there to pay your last respects, be there in their last moments and stuff. And my sister-in-law and her cousin were talking, and I was just like looking at Papa, and they, I was like, y'all. And then, you know, my sister-in-law was like shaking him like, Papa, Papa. And I'm like, Lene, this is what is supposed to happen.
Like,
this is, yeah. And how nice that he's like going peacefully and everything.
With family around.
But your instinct is to like, no, I can't let them go. Mm-hmm, and you see someone, you know, not breathing. You're like, I got to shake him back. But
yeah,
it is a nice thought to think like they were just resting. They heard familiar voices and they were like, and now I can go. Or they were like, I am so tired of listening to these bitches. I am peacing out.
I said, Uncle Jerry can sleep through a conversation. That may be the loudest Thanksgiving. He's just like in the corner. And
he learned so how.
It was one last nap. It was a way he wanted to go out. Well, thank you very much for sharing that, Brianna. And good luck in med school. You are the Definitely. Type of people that should be a doctor. Sinister Hood will be right back. Well, this next one is from me. No, I'm just kidding. It is from someone also called Heather. So shout out to a fellow Heather.
Other Heathers?
There can only be one. Give me your address. We have to fight to the death. But Heather says, my 2-year-old communes with the dead. Hi, Christy and Heather. Big fan. I've been listening to you for years. You two are my ride or die through many middle of the night pumping sessions. Thank you for always being great company. I've previously written in and had a story about signs from my mom, who has passed on one of the very first few Freaky Friday episodes. In Freaky Friday 210, you talked about signs from the other side. Again, it reminded me of this even spookier and comforting experience I had last year. My mom passed away in January 2022. I didn't find out until August of that year that I was pregnant with my daughter, and she was born the following April. Needless to say, my daughter has never met my mom. However, we look at pictures, and I tell stories about her often, and from time to time, we go visit her grave. I regularly dream about my mom. I almost always know it's a dream when she shows up. I spend the night crying while holding her hand and caressing her face, something I did a lot before her death. She was in a coma for 3 weeks following a series of strokes. 1 week last summer, I dreamt about my mom 3 nights in a row. Although I don't go visit her very often, she's buried about an hour away from us in the town where she grew up. I felt compelled to go. I packed up my daughter, and we headed out for a day on the road. When we arrived, I sat in front of my mom's grave and had a little chat like I usually do, catching her up on our lives. My 2-year-old played with a nickel she found, making it walk along headstones. At some point, she noticed I was crying. At first, she just made comments like, "Mama crying," and "Mama sad." Then, she put her hand on my left cheek, looked me in the eye, and said, "It's nice to see you." I held her hand against my face and sobbed as she said it 3 more times. Then, all of a sudden, she looked around and said, "Oh, where did Grandma go?" and resumed playing around as she had before. I've heard many times before that children have a special connection to the spirit world. If that isn't proof, I don't know what is. I have many more stories about ways my mom shows she's still looking out for us, if you're interested. Heather. Very.
Oh, and Heather included a sweet picture of your sweet girl next to your mother's headstone. Man, that feels like a moment where somebody used a smaller little person to send you a message.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially the 3 dreams beforehand, like, "Hey, come out here."
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I guess she was like, "I'm about to be at the graveyard. Meet me there." But
maybe they have planned visits in the afterlife. They're like
certain dates.
I mean, we have, you know, schedules. Perhaps they do too.
They're like, the gates will be open on this day. Mm-hmm. Gather your loved ones. Bring the conduits.
Oh, it's like Coco.
There you go. Sweet girl, though. I love that she was so comfortable and natural playing that maybe it left her open to Grandma, you know, visiting.
Her.
I don't know.
It's so nice to see you is, a weird thing for a kid to say to their mom who you've been around all day.
Well, and especially the touch of the face.
Yeah.
And then to say it like, "It's so nice to see you." It's so nice to see
when
you.
When she caressed her mom's face see you, and it's like, in the last few weeks of her death, too.
You're not like reenacting it, but what a beautiful experience. Mm-hmm. And you said there's other ways that she's reached out. Yeah, I'd love another story.
I'd love to hear them, yeah.
These are always fascinating. And I think it's that time, the book I've talked about called Signs, if people are interested in stuff like this. And it's a woman that's gathered like, you know, hundreds of people's stories very similar to this. So inexplicable.
Not the Mel Gibson movie.
No, not with Joaquin
Way
Phoenix.
Way different.
You're like, this is all aliens, Heather. What
it
are
signs,
you
though.
Hang on a minute. Oh, man. Well, I love it. Well, yeah, we look forward to your other stories, too. Thanks for sending that in. Mm-hmm. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back. This next one is from Brianna, different from our earlier Brianna. And the subject line is Bright Lights in the Middle of Nowhere. It started on a regular morning, driving to work. I worked an early day shift. My day starts at 4 a.m., so I was driving to work at about 3 a.m. Obviously, at that time of day, things are pretty dark and pretty quiet on the roads, especially where I work, out in the rural areas of central Queensland, Australia. It had been a rainy week, and that morning the clouds had finally cleared. It was also a full moon, so the sky was bright. I was taking the opportunity to peek out the window every now and then while I drove to look at the stars. I saw one star out of my driver's side window that was brighter than all the rest. It kept catching my eye as it was by far the brightest thing in the sky. As I looked at it, it would continuously blink out of view. I thought it must have been disappearing behind tree branches as I drove, until I realized I was driving a fairly treeless stretch of highway. As I kept driving, I was trying to look at it as often as I safely could. There was just something so interesting about it. But every time I looked at it, it would disappear. So I kept looking at the area where it had been, waiting for it to come back, sort of expecting the blinking lights of a plane. Every time the light came back, it was in a slightly different spot, but just not in the way a plane moves. The movement wasn't linear. Sometimes it would be to the right of where it had been, sometimes to the left, up, down, you get the idea. This is the part in the voice note I sent to my husband where I start saying, I know I sound crazy, but... Suddenly, the next time it blinked on, it was through my front windscreen, not the driver's side window I'd been peeking out of. Then, the light crossed from directly in front of me to the passenger side of the windscreen and to the passenger side window in less than 5 seconds. It was such a drastic jump of difference that I thought it had to be a helicopter, and it had to be close as hell, but... I couldn't see or hear anything. There were no red-green aviation lights either, so if it was a chopper, they were flying dark, low, and in massive breach of the law. Once it had zoomed out of my sight line, I felt a bit sick. It just felt wrong. I got to work, sent a madman's voice note to my husband explaining it all, and tried to go about my day. I didn't forget, and every trip to or from work in the darkness had me watching the skies. This all happened back in December 2024. So why did I remember and decide to write in now? Because right now, I'm back in my old clinic, working the night shift at the same site I worked at when this all happened. I've been catching up with some buddies who I haven't seen for a while. And one decided to tell me about the bright light that hangs out in the sky over the laydown yard at the far end of the mine. The bright light that seems to blink in and out of view sometimes when you look at it, and travels across the sky faster than his eye can follow sometimes. The bright light that doesn't show up when you try to film it. The bright light that has smaller, orange lights that converge on it and disappear too. My job can be a lonely one. As a paramedic on remote mine sites, I usually sit on a clinic alone for 12 to 14 hours, mixed in with occasional patrols around the place by car or by foot. I've seen some spooky stuff through the years, but I always put it down to being a bit sleepy or not wearing my glasses or just losing my marbles from the isolation. But this is the first time I've had someone who not only confirmed my story, but expanded on it too. So tonight, when I go for my patrol, I just might go for a ride to the laydown yard, park the ambulance, and see what I can see.
Fuck you, do it.
Okay. Is there anything that terrifies me more than the thought of driving at 3 a.m. just in the bush?
And then it's like something is coming around your face.
I'm like, I'm already, you know, worried about a giant spider that might jump out and take down the car.
Yeah, right? Big enough to flip your whole wheels over, flip it over. Yeah.
Well, I feel like the validation has got to feel good that you're not the only one that saw it.
No, definitely, because you're like, well, and I think it's genius, by the way, to send the voice note. Shout out for that idea. Anytime anybody that's listening, if you see some crazy shit happen, pull your phone out. Just record yourself. It's called a present sense impression in the legal field, and that's it's applicable or it's admissible beyond the hearsay rule because it's like the idea is like you remembered it right then fresh.
There's
so
there's a psychology term for it too. I can't think of it.
But yeah, it's like something about like the immediacy.
If you say it, if you say it like in the moment, then it carries more weight.
It makes you remember too, I'm sure, for later too. So I feel like that helps legitimize this. Mm-hmm. Some of this, if you haven't read UFO of God by Chris Bledsoe, the movement of the orbs sometimes, and he saw it when he was driving late at night the first time. He claims you can call the orbs to you. So if you park the ambulance out there, get out there in the dark, late, meditative state, and just say, like, I want to see you. I want to know what you are. Come in peace.
Why doesn't this work for me?
You got to go out at 3 a.m. in the dark in the bush.
In Australia? Well,
you got to get to the bush.
I got to get to the bush first.
Step one, get to the bush.
I have been outside at 3 a.m. calling for things, but never in the bush. So maybe that's what I got to do.
Ma'am, what were you doing out here? I was digging in the bush. You can't say you're digging in the bush for bush. But yeah, I mean, the idea that it was moving, not because you naturally, I would assume this is aviation lights, but she points out that's very illegal. And also right in front of your windscreen is very close to be a helicopter. And we hear helicopters outside.
So it's fucking loud.
If we're trying to record a cameo.
I thought we were being invaded the other night because so my house is on a flight path and sometimes they fly so low that I'm like, this is it. It's happening. It's happening.
Did you see that guy in, I believe it was in California. It's a man in his house hanging out and it's his Ring back doorbell footage that it's like his backyard security cam footage. A hot air balloon with like 13 people just landed in his yard and they're like, sorry. And he comes around and he's like, hey. And he's like filming and essentially they had an emergency and the pilot had to find a place to land. The thing about it, this guy's backyard, not big. Like it's not big.
Yeah.
It's like a strip but they precision landed it. Wow. And then there's this follow-up footage. Of course, everybody in the neighborhood's like, did you guys install
Holy
a big
shit. Bucket?
Because it is like the type of balloon you would see at like a festival. It's humongous blue with like a big
classic
moon
hot air
on it.
Balloon.
Yeah. It's funny because it's just like a house and then boo, balloon behind it. And so they had to, they evacuate everybody. They deflated the balloon, drug the balloon, everything out into the front. And then I think they rolled it away on a truck. Maybe they took back off, but they did get it out of the man's backyard. But you're just fucking sitting in your house and you're like, thunk, and you come around and you go, that's
you get
a hole.
A notification, somebody's
motion,
that you're,
motion
you're
in the back.
Motion detected. You're like, what in hell is going on? I thought they'd invade by planes, but I mean, maybe hot air balloons is how we're doing it.
And I had no idea. I mean, it makes sense though, because you do have to land eventually and let everyone out. But I was like, to precision land it, not just in a field, but to be able to land it between like a big wooden fence and
that
a house.
Some skill.
And the guy was like, well, at least it wasn't on my roof. Like,
dude,
thanks.
That would have crushed. I mean, first of all, probably would have killed everybody on board and crushed his house. Hot air balloons, I've never been on one.
Me neither.
I can't do it because I know too much. But my brother proposed to my sister-in-law on one. So, they can be a lot of fun. Yeah, very romantic.
Yeah.
On the flip side, they could be very deadly.
No,
and I've seen too many videos. However, the fact that they just use fire.
That's crazy.
To steer it, essentially, and make it go faster and slower. Like, that's what this guy's doing to land it in the yard. Yeah.
And to get it in the yard, like I said, this guy is amazing. I didn't realize early on when I worked with my old boss who was a pilot that it makes sense. That's a whole separate, that's a thing. I guess I didn't realize.
To get your hot air balloon
license. There's a, you know, you got your pilots, like a regular plane, helicopter, whirligig, hot air. No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, I think blimps too are their own thing. And
they've all got different.
All kinds of crazy shit.
I mean, you
got to
have a motorcycle license versus an automobile.
Don't give anybody one of those.
Got to get a school bus license. Yeah, they will.
Don't give anyone one of those. But it's a big ass hot air balloon. I would not go in one because my hometown, you know, you hear a Plano Balloon Festival is very popular and famous. It didn't used to be in Plano. It used to be Mesquite, Texas, baby.
Oh,
and
really?
I grew up with those. First of all, the balloons would fly very low over the houses in retrospect. too low. It was the 80s and 90s. And then I think it was the 1992, a tragedy occurred and they ran one of them, not intentionally, but accidentally. I don't know if it was a gust of wind. The balloon struck a electrical line.
Yeah.
And I believe it was just two people is too many, but it was two people inside. It wasn't that it was, they were taking a large group on a ride. I think it was just the people that were doing it, but given
they died.
Yes. And that it was a festival. There were not only witnesses, but a significant amount of footage. People had their handheld camcorders and stuff, and it was on the news and stuff, but then they didn't have it in Mesquite anymore.
They moved it 30 minutes away where nothing, no crime happened.
Like, they're more responsible in Plano. Are they? I don't know. No. It wasn't our fault. We did nothing wrong.
There was a huge heroin problem there like 20 years ago.
In 2005, I think it was like, whatever, like, this magazine gave Plano the most amazing. And I was like, that's when they were having the cheese heroin epidemic.
So
people shit on Milestone all the time.
No.
We didn't have enough money to do cheese. We were all at the rodeo. But
oh, man. My hometown right now.
How's it going? Wildness?
The
Fort Worth,
the
baby,
the school, the ISD seems to be having some problems.
They're having some problems. The thing I will say about Tarrant County, I'm a huge fan of the people of Tarrant County because there's some sort of three-person commission right now that is cutting people off. And go follow, there's several, it's like 817 podcast, and there's a couple others that follow like hyper-local. But these citizens are going up going, we know what you're doing. We know you're cutting our time. We know you're taking our money. We know you're doing this, and we're going to make sure you get out. So the amount of like angered and parents, mostly moms, that have been going to those meetings and making it clear, like, you think you could pull the wool over our eyes. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I'm Fort Worth, baby. I don't know who you thought she was going to get past. Fort Worth mama, I don't think so. She went up. She was like, your jobs are our jobs. She's like, you serve the people, and we're going to make sure you remember that. I was like, that's a threat. She's going to kick you with her boot.
Well, when the schools repeatedly fail, at some point, TEA takes it off your hands, and it's no longer your school district. But I believe they now have it back. And I just saw that they're doing like an across the board 5% raise for Fort Worth ISD teachers. So
well deserved. It needs to be a 50% raise.
Yes.
Whatever you can get.
That is one reason, a big reason why teachers stay in districts. And I mean, nobody can fault them. They already make so little that every dime counts. And, you know, like anybody, you got to go where the money is to support your own family and yourself. So I'm glad that those teachers are about hopefully going to see some much needed change. I don't remember it being bad when I was there. I only went to public school and high school. I mean, I wasn't paying attention to how we were ranked and stuff, but I think it's in the past 5 years, really
kind of
gone downhill.
Interesting. Yeah. I think a lot of kids struggle after COVID too, with like maybe missing stuff or missing, you know, just getting behind and whatnot. It's hard as a society. We'll have to deal with that. Not right now, though.
There's a huge, there's a big school board meeting coming up next month where I'm now involved in a huge group me of parents that are trying to get less technology and screens used in the classroom. And a doctor chimed in, a pediatrician last night, and was like, I've been practicing for 25 years, and the problems that we see now with kids, I've never seen before. She's like, their posture, they are slumped just from looking at phones. She's like, they don't have spatial awareness because they're constantly looking down. They don't swing their arms when they walk because they're on their phone the whole time. So like all of these, you know, I don't know what you would call those.
Maybe social developmental
issues. They're not developing them. And now they have a bunch of other problems, including like the inability to strike up a conversation with somebody.
Yes.
A lot of social problems.
My new favorite podcast is called The Jam, and it's these 20-something guys in Chicago. And they're being so young. I love their – I mean, one of them just turned like 21 or 22. But I love their kind of perspective, and they're like – we had to learn how to talk. Like, they were like, we were also raised on screens, but the difference is, like, at some point you have to be like, I need to interact with people. So, and they're very good at talking. They've got a great podcast. But they were like, I didn't come out like just perfect. Like, I had to go and practice and go be in public. And I think it's hard because you don't have to practice if you do have a screen. So it's like something you have to consciously do. And it's crazy. We now live in a world where it's like, you need to consciously go
go outside.
No, go touch grass.
To, move your, do, don't be like, what was that? Was that Molly Shannon on Seinfeld that she was like walking with her arms straight out?
No, it wasn't Molly Shannon. It was the bra lady. No, it was Molly Shannon. You're right. It wasn't the bra lady.
She just walked with her arms down.
Yeah, and they're like, so why doesn't she swing her arms when she walks? Well, I don't know, but apparently the kids aren't developing the way that they used to be now. And she said, the doctor said, the only thing that has changed is the amount of technology they use.
Yeah, I mean, go talk to the school board, because I think that's the type of person where it's like, we need a doctor.
Yeah.
We need a doctor talking about goddamn. Sinister Hood will be right back. This final story, I'm so excited to share. I can't wait to read it to you. It comes to us from Jason from Spooky CLT. I'm going to go ahead and say Spooky Clit.
I have got a necklace. Jason, too. Heather got me. We have matching bestie necklaces that say CLT. Because CLT, when we were in your city, everywhere it said CLT, and I was like, it just be saying Clit.
Everywhere.
To the point where we wrote it into the show we were touring at that time.
We had a bit of a joke already, and then we were like, let's crank the Clit up in CLT. So put that on your new billboards. Crank the Clit up in CLT.
Crank the Clit up.
Loved it. I went hard on the rail trail.
I remember that.
I'll tell you that.
I got railed
on the trail. Oh, man, we love you guys. Well, thank you, Jason from Spooky Clit, for sending this in. I'm just kidding. Spooky CLT. And the subject line, incredible. A ghost told us Bigfoot was created in Charlotte, North Carolina. Well, that's it. It's official.
Yep.
All right. Well, Jason writes, hello. I have a very different type of encounter to share with you. Last year's Friday the 13th in June, I hosted an event called Spooky CLT Presents in association with Charlotte Area Paranormal Society, the Investigation of Morris Costumes. The event was a fundraiser where guests would get a history tour of the haunted Morris Costume Shop on Monroe Road in Charlotte and hear about the alleged hauntings. For many years, staff and customers have said the building is haunted, and they've experienced poltergeist activity, phantom smells, and they believe the original owner, Mr. Philip Morris, is an intelligent spirit that checks in on his property and the current owner, who is his son. Philip Morris was the creator of the Morris Costumes Empire that rivals Spirit Halloween. Philip Morris was also an internationally known showman who was a ringleader for the circus, a late-night horror movie host, Dr. Evil, and known for other crazy and wild stunts. Morris made the claim that he provided the suit for the famous Patterson-Gimlin Bluff Creek Bigfoot footage. This story makes sense because Morris was one of the only people making gorilla costumes at the time, although Patterson modified the suit that he is said to have provided. After making that claim nearly 30 years after the footage was originally released, his attempts to recreate the suit for show were not received well. Morris passed in 2017. The night of the event, on Friday the 13th, we intended to ask the alleged spirit of Mr. Morris if his claim is still true, thinking that in the afterlife he would have no reason to lie. Investigators believe they made contact with him. One team said that they were in the retail area and asked Mr. Morris to show them something. By using an EMF detector, they were led to a magic box that featured the metal ring act used in circuses. This was Mr. Morris's main show when he was in the circus. Mr. Morris's grandchild said that he typically gets the phantom smell of carnival, cotton candy, peanuts, and elephant poop when he feels his grandfather is around. He had not smelled it in years, but he did smell it the night of the event. Another group was using dowsing rods and a spirit box to make contact with him. Only the women in the group got any reactions on the rods, and on the spirit box, they heard words like prank and whiskey when they asked the question, "What do you miss about being alive?" His grandson confirmed that these answers made sense for him. Lastly, a group was using a jump rope style chain of EMF detectors. When they asked if he created the suit for Bigfoot, the entire thing lit up for the first time that night as well, which the group understood as an enthusiastic yes. Other spirits were found that night as well, including a spirit of someone who passed away in a car accident nearby, and a person who used to work backstage lighting in theater shows. Overall, we understand that this is not smoking gun proof of Mr. Morris's connection to the famous Bigfoot film, but it's more than nothing. The event was a fundraiser for the Old Settler Cemetery Initiative, a group trying to preserve and restore Charlotte, North Carolina's oldest known cemetery. You can learn more at historicelmwoodpinewood.org/settlerscemeteryinitiative. I hope you found this as interesting as we did.
I did.
Hell motherfucking yes. First of all, Grandpa, is that you? It's elephant
I can,
shit.
I can tell. I'll tell you where Mr. Morris is. And that's Zach Bagans' shit show in Vegas.
He listened to the haunted museum.
The exact smell. I don't remember elephant poop, but the carnival smell was overwhelming.
Just pumping it in. Pumping it in Lordy. On all of us. And telling us how people died horribly in a fire.
Did we mention him when we did Bigfoot? I feel like we did.
Mr.
Because,
Morris?
Yeah, because we did know that somebody had made the costume.
I don't know if we, maybe we knew someone made a costume, but I don't know about Philip Morris. What a name. Isn't that the guy that made the cigarettes or the company that made cigarettes was Philip Morris?
That was his other thing.
He had two jobs. Is that you,
he
Mr.
led
Morris?
The circus and he was a big smoker.
Big smoker. Well, mm-hmm. That is crazy though that the, not only that the ladies got the answers on the rod.
Of course they
did. He's a ladies man. But to ask specifically about something, I feel like this type of character, as far as Mr. Morris, is much like the colonel at Wilson Castle, mm-hmm. where it was their life's work, it was their livelihood, it was their passion, it was their love. They knew the place better than anybody. Their literal soul is like entwined in the objects there. Mm-hmm. That's like whatever happened to the meat sack, that's where he ended up.
He's there. 100%. He's checking in on his son, of course. If his son runs it still, I'd stick around too. And my words will also be prank and whiskey after I die.
Yeah, I got to think of what words someone's I might like, say. What do you miss about living?
Yeah, how do you describe your 30s? Whiskey would have definitely been one of the words.
Yeah, my magic time machine days, the way I drank Crown
oh
Royal
my
and
God.
Cranberries
Me
juice.
Too. Oh, Jameson, Crown Royal. Jameson,
yeah.
Man, oh man.
Emptying those bottles out, I'll tell you what. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, thank you for sharing this with us. This is so badass, Jason. If we're in Charlotte, we're going to come tag along on something the next time we come to the Clit.
You got, yeah. I'm always trying to get to the Clit. Is Nelson of the Ghost Guild, or they like, maybe y'all can all.
Driving distance.
Yeah, I don't, how far is Charlotte from?
Raleigh. We drove it. It's about 2-3 hours.
Okay.
2.5-3 hours. I can't remember perfectly, but
yeah,
something like that.
Y'all
reasonable
hook
drive.
Up with Nelson from
Hell
the
yeah.
Ghost Guild.
Go, take the Ghost Guild to the freaking costume shop.
They'll
and let you. And then call us.
Invite us, please.
Tell us to come. We'll come. We'll do it overnight
we
at the costume shop.
Will.
Sounds incredible.
I'm dying to get out of this fucking state.
I'm trying to get back to the Clit. I'm trying to get back on that rail trail, baby. Shout out. It makes me jealous. It's a good rail trail. But thank you, Jason, for sending this in. And thanks to, I just like that Spooky CLT exists. If you're in Charlotte, go support that. And the Charlotte Area Paranormal Society, which sounds so fancy.
Oh, it does.
They're
yes,
like,
very.
We'll be having a tea to discuss.
The whole an association with the Charlotte Area Paranormal Society, the investigation of Morris costumes. Sounds like an event the Queen would be invited
and
to.
And I will buy tickets to a baby. I will be there. You tell me when. But thank you for not only for doing that, but for thinking of us when you're getting a ghost to tell you about Bigfoot. You're like, I got to tell Christy and Heather.
Dude.
You do.
You ticked all the boxes. Now we just got to get the Ghost Guild there, us, and
you guys
get some more answers. You guys. Yeah. I mean, y'all are the
experts in the.
In the anchors. You know, I think if people's relatives are there, they're more likely to show up and say something.
You know, it's like a legit safe place that you can come by. So, yeah. Well, very good. Thank you very much. Amazing. That's what a story. What a tale. If any of you have encountered a ghost that told you about Bigfoot, especially, we would love to hear that.
Oh, absolutely.
More ghosts.
Thank you so much to everyone that sent in your stories today. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you have encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO or an orb, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/freakyfriday. Speaking of freaky, got something creepy caught on camera? Found a weird or unexplainable clip online? Maybe you just have a funny video you want us to see. Send it our way and we'll live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just put in your email address, get immediate access to the chat, to Sunday Scaries, all the original videos before they go on YouTube, and a whole backlog of free Patreon content just as a thank you for signing up.
Absolutely. We appreciate you and we'll be back May 3rd.
May 3rd. If you like our free episodes like the one you heard today, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content, like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court, True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime, Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling can be discussed, and Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input. What was the most recent true crime headlines that we put up there?
Oh, I was laughing at the Am I the Asshole, All Spaghetti. But yeah, yes,
we that did, one's a good one.
We did have a true crime headlines. We talked about Rex Uhrman, the Gilgo Beach serial killer. We talked about the One Taste. Speaking of Nicole diving into the clit, she has been sentenced. And we also, we talked about the Texas Killing Fields, a huge break in that case. And then also, we have an Am I the Asshole where it was Oops, All Spaghetti. So
it's all spaghetti assholes.
What happens when you get too much spaghetti, it's assholes. And we also offer free trials. That's where you join for a week at any of the tiers. Check out all the perks. Cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. Now is the perfect time for you to do a free trial at the highest tier, the Getting Into It tier, because we are doing our quarterly live bonus content April 30th, 8:30 p.m. Central. So if you get on a free trial, come to the quarterly BOCO, stick around if you want to, or cancel before the trial is over without getting charged. But if you do want to stick around, come to that. And also do an annual membership. You get a month free and a ton of stuff.
You get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live stream bonus content. Like Heather said, our next one is April 30th. And this time, we always let you all vote on it. But usually we'll put up like
three
types of, you know, segments that we do and everybody votes. This time,
we're doing it.
We're Carson Daly-ing it. Yes. We're doing a Total Request Live. You throw in the comments on Patreon. We'll anything. And if it's within reason and gets full nude true crime headlines. And
they're like, talk out of your ass like Ace Ventura for one whole episode. You're like, all right.
Okay. I mean, this wasn't, I was going to anyway. So. But you can upvote it and we'll whatever. I'm excited to see what everybody throws out there.
Whatever you want, baby, we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can head over to sinisterhood.com, click shop on the top banner. You get merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos, and use the discount code in the pin post on Patreon to get a deal.
Yeah, while you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much to everyone that's left kind words and 5 stars. You can submit topics and cases you'd like us to cover, and you'll find fun things like topic-based playlists so you can send only cryptid content to the friend that loves cryptids, or only paranormal.
Only cryptids
to the,
is a your new website.
Ghosty bestie. Only cryptids.
I'm trying to go to only cryptids.
OC? Yeah, I'm going to get my OC page going pretty soon.
Oh, man, we love. Oh, don't forget to get your tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2027. You can go to our website or go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister. Get on that ship, baby. It's going to be a good time. I can't wait. Take me.
It's literally like
less than a year.
And I'm still looking forward to it, and it's helping me get through every day.
Honestly. Follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, maybe you want to treat yourself to a pep talk. Book a cameo now, from happy birthday to birth announcements to congratulations on whatever it is you've done. We would love to celebrate it with you by creating a customized video. You get it right away. You don't have to go anywhere to get it. And it's a brand new gift every time because we do them fresh. We don't send you. If you already got a cameo, we won't just resend you the other one. We make them new. We're like, already done this
one. We don't
one.
Even know how to do that, honestly.
No, it would take too much. So we'll do it fresh.
It'd be easier just to send a fresh one.
Go to cameo.com on a web browser /sinisterhood and get the best deal on a computer at Cameo. Where can people find you on a computer?
Oh, man. Well, there's probably lots of places.
Only cryptids is the first one.
Only cryptids. But I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy and Wallace, and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
Just shout into the ether, Heather versus the world, and I shall appear.
And there she is. There she blows.
On the rail trail.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy.
Sinning.